You are listening to the Hodges Huddle, where we discuss all things in the wide world of sports. Here is your KLSU sports team.
Welcome into the Hodges Huddle. I'm your host, Andre Champagne, and today I'm joined by my co-workers, Andon Brabham and Michael Poggi, man. What's going on this calm little Tuesday? Shout out, Jaden.
Calm little Tuesday, Jaden Smith, our guy. It feels good to be back on the pod. It's been a couple weeks. A lot has happened in sports, but my favorite sporting event of the year is coming up, so I'm super excited to get to talk about that.
And you are so right.
We're not talking about my favorite sporting event of the year today, but the Champions League is on.
And, yes, indeed.
I did not mention
and Arsenal
that.
And Bayern Munich played today. Heck of a game. They drew 2-2.
Okay.
City Madrid. And Madrid played. Who won that game? They tied?
They drew 3-3.
3-3.
Two draws today. Wow. Yep. Okay. Well, like you guys said, sports are starting to kind of die down a little bit after this week. As South Carolina won yet another championship under Dawn Staley, and UConn went
the
back
goat,
to back, man.
Dan Hurley, baby.
Dan Hurley. But it is officially, like Andon said, Masters Week, baby.
Woo!
What a time to be a golf fan. But first, let's get into some LSU sports. So this weekend, LSU baseball.
Do we have to?
I know we don't want to.
Do we have to? Are we sure we have to do this?
Yeah.
We are. LSU baseball lost its fourth straight SEC series, this time being at home against Vandy. After winning the national championship last year, this team is now unranked, and it's looking very unlikely for them to even make the NCAA tournament. It's a championship hangover, man. I mean, Ole Miss did it a few years ago. Miss State did it a few years ago. Ridiculous. But first off, you went into the year thinking this was going to be one of the best pitching staffs in the nation. And you look at it now, and LSU sits at only a 4.69 ERA, but I feel like the SEC has been way worse than that. So my first question for y'all is, do you think this is a pitching coaching issue, or is it just the pitchers not being able to go out and execute?
I'll tally it up to a little bit of both. I think that Nate Yeske has not done a very good job of implementing what Jason Kelly and Wes Johnson have done at LSU, especially Wes Johnson, with the way that pitching staff came on late. But also, at the end of the day, you got to execute your pitches, and you got to throw with conviction. And I don't think that LSU has done a very good job of throwing with conviction a lot of this season. I think a lot of what they've done has been lackadaisical. I think it's been half-assed, to be quite blunt about it. Yeah. I think the effort hasn't been there. The passion hasn't been there. And at the end of the day, that's what it takes to play high-level college ball, is you have to have the energy and you have to have the enthusiasm and you have to have the pride. And I think that's missing from this LSU team right now, especially on the pitching side.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm going to tally it up to both as well. I think that you're right that the pitching, there hasn't been a lot of passion. There hasn't been a lot of enthusiasm from this team. But to be frank, I mean, Nate Yeske is also – they've also been doing questionable things, like questionable pulling guys out in certain situations. Yep. And I think that can ruin, you know, a lot of momentum in a player.
Yeah, absolutely.
And their mindset, because baseball is a very mental game.
It is.
And so I think it has to do with that. But I also just think that our pitching staff is just simply not as good as we thought it was going to be, and from a skill level. And I think that we're just going to have to go out and find better players in the future.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree with both of you guys. I think it's a mix of both. Pitchers' inability to execute on a pitch-to-pitch basis is definitely hurting them. Like, it's definitely hurting them. Lots of LSU pitchers are just struggling to throw strikes consistently, giving up a lot of walks. That's really what it is. And I think some of that, like we said, comes down with coaching, where maybe they're not, you know, developing some of these guys to where they need to be. So I think it's a mix of both, but you can't say that the talent isn't there. I mean, you have guys that pitched in Omaha really successfully last year, and they're just not as great. I mean, you look and see what Gavin Gidger did in Omaha last year and compare him
to Thatcher Hurd,
right? And it's just like, what is going on, right? But obviously, Coach Johnson is great, knows what he's doing. But as far as pitching goes, do you think the guys that Coach Yeske and Coach Johnson have gone with in certain situations have been questionable? and hurt the Tigers down the line?
I have an interesting note about this because I worked the Saturday game, it was Friday night of a three-game set, game two, against Vanderbilt this past weekend.
I know exactly
what and Jay Johnson, after the game, where LSU blew a lead, it was a back-and-forth game, but at the end of it, LSU blew a lead with some questionable pitching changes. And after the game, he was asked about his pitcher management, and what he said was, I'm going to continue to pitch guys that we believe in. At what point does that belief wane is my question, because at what point do we not believe in Thatcher Hurd anymore? You've already demoted him from being the third starter to being a bullpen guy.
And he's obviously not comfortable in that situation.
At what point does he continue to kind of fall down the ranks and no longer be a guy that you're willing to use in high leverage situations? Because right now, I don't trust anybody on the LSU pitching staff, not named Luke Holman or Gage Jump, to get us out of a high leverage situation.
Or Griffin. It's
just been not like, at what point does that trust go away? I've said throughout this year, Jay Johnson has lost his touch with this pitching staff. He has no idea right now who his guys are and who he should be throwing in spots.
It's a tough place to be
Absolutely.
In. It's a really tough place to be in because it's like you thought you were going to have too many options at one point, and now it's like, well, who can I freaking trust at this point?
I'm not going to say that I envy Jay Johnson or that I can do what he's failing to do right now. I'm not going to say that. Right. But what I'm saying is we pay him $2 million a year to make sure he does this the right way. Right. And right now it feels like the pitching staff has more questions than it did in the fall when you were supposed to have questions about the pitching staff. Now we're having those questions in the spring, which is a very, very bad spot to be in when the SEC is top to bottom the most dangerous conference in college baseball.
Yeah,
100%. And going back to that that Friday game, you know, you got Helmers in the game. And he's
doing good.
Oh my God!
Doing good. Gets two.
Are we about to talk about the RJ Austin at bat?
Yes.
Gets two outs.
Eckenhausen goes.
And then we put in Eckenhausen, and then immediately first pitch. It wasn't even was it Eckenhausen?
I think it was.
I don't remember exactly who it was.
But it was one pitch.
Will Helmers gets RJ Austin, who is Vanderbilt's best hitter and had killed you all night. You get him on a righty-righty matchup. He just got their best hitter. There's two outs in the inning and a tied ball game. And you pull him.
Yep.
I'm just going to let that hang for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was trying to say. That's what I was trying to say.
No, like I know. And not only that, but, I mean,
it's just bad.
There's been more moments, too.
It's bad pitcher management. It's bad pitch calling.
It was Lauer. It was Lauer.
Yes, Justin Lauer comes in for a lefty-lefty matchup, and homeboy hitting in the two-hole gets him.
Uh-huh.
And they take the lead, and they don't give it up.
Yeah.
It's just – it's so frustrating because you were in that game, and the hitting has –
Oh, no, you pretty much had the game.
Nobody all year had hit Bryce Cunningham the way LSU did Friday night. Yep. Nobody all year. Bryce Cunningham had a sub-3 ERA. He's been one of the best pitchers in the conference for Vanderbilt. And you hit him around. You touched him up for a good portion of that game. And you were in the ball game, and your pitching just completely disappeared. Yeah. It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, like this has been the most concerning issue to me from the pitching. Obviously, the walks are bad, but we haven't seen the guys that we saw early in the season in SEC play, which is really – questionable, like guys like Fidel Ulloa, Micah Bucknum, even Samuel Dutton was a guy that was actually, you know, having a decent year. You just haven't seen those guys, and it's like, why not go to those guys, right? Like, why not throw them in? I mean, Fidel Ulloa was your closer to begin the season, so why are you not using those guys? I mean, obviously there's a reason to something, but why are we keep stressing these guys' arms and just keep putting them in the same situations that they're not succeeding in?
So. I got another point for you in that game, too, the same one that we're referencing, which was really the turning point in this series, because LSU wins 10-6 on Thursday night, and everybody wearing purple and gold says, oh, my God, LSU might be back. Vanderbilt, of their 8 runs that they scored, they won the ball game 8-6. 6 of those 8 runs that they scored came with 2 outs. They had 6 two-out RBIs. Yeah. LSU had none. And that's the story of the game. They were able to fight off tough pitches and be there in the clutch moments, and LSU wasn't able to get clutch outs.
So who are some pitchers that you think LSU should maybe give some more?
The guys you just named, the dudes that apparently we can only trust to play North Dakota State. Yeah. Like, what? That's what I don't get. If they pitch well, they pitch well. Yeah. It's hard to win in college baseball no matter who you play. This team just lost to Southern last Monday. And we're talking about, oh, we can't really trust Fidel Ulloa to go pitch against SEC hitters. The hell you can't.
Yeah.
Like, the hell you can't. Yeah. He was your best reliever during the early part of the season, and now suddenly he's damaged goods. We can't pitch him against SEC hitters.
That's what doesn't add up to me. Is like,
why, that exactly. That,
yeah.
Like, if you're it's gonna, just like, you know, why not keep trying another guy? Like, it's, I guess, I know you have to pitch guys that you trust, but at some point you have to just try something, because you never know. Those guys want to be pitching on that mound just as much as the guys that are going in, if not more.
Yeah.
They probably are thinking to themselves, I mean, I play baseball, and, you know, seeing a guy that's struggling and he knows he's struggling and you're not put in that situation to where you think you can succeed.
Yeah.
That's not a good look, man. That's not a good look. But, you know, you're going to say those guys, like the same guys.
Yeah, the same guys you were referencing, Mike. You
know, yeah, Paul? I just don't understand, like, because, like y'all said, in the beginning of the season, we had this whole. It seemed like they had kind of a blueprint of what they wanted to do.
Who was pitching midweek? Who was pitching
exactly?
Weekend, and now you just don't have that.
Right. You don't have the blueprint. You don't know, as fans, as whoever. We don't know what is going on. We don't know what's happening. And to be honest, like you said, I don't think the coaching staff really knows what they want to do.
Yeah.
And when
it shows how good it was.
And now. Yeah. And that it really hurts us, in my opinion.
But I think guys like, dude, Aiden Moffitt, Gavin Guidry, Fidel Ulloa, like those guys I just mentioned, all guys that LSU just doesn't use as much and should work into the bullpen. I mean, you have a guy that is a sophomore throwing 97, 98. Consistently, and you don't use a man. That's just what I don't understand.
I'm confused, and this may be very accusatory of head coach Jay Johnson, who was very kind to sit in here and talk to us about this team before the season started, and we're very grateful for that, but it's our job to be objective about what's going on.
Right.
It feels to me that Jay Johnson is playing favorites with this pitching staff.
He has
his guys that he likes and he trusts, and he's not willing to change that because he's built this emotional connection to a guy like Thatcher Hurd. Because to him, Thatcher Hurd is like his white whale. It's the guy that he wanted really bad in the transfer portal. He got him.
And he kind of promised him.
And he told him, hey, you're gonna start here at LSU. And outside of a couple games in Omaha, Thatcher Hurd has been objectively bad for LSU. So at what point do we stop trusting him and start trusting other guys? Like, that's what I'm not getting, is it feels like Jay has this emotional connection to these guys that he's not willing to get past
and I understand
to make the team better.
I understand if you're going to a guy consistently that you know can really, you know, close the game for you, like he did with Riley Cooper last year. But it's not happening with any of the guys except for Griffin Herring right now. As far as the bullpen goes, I mean, honestly, I think Will Helmers is one of the guys that has one of the lower ERAs on the team now. I mean, when's the question?
I mean, when you only face one hitter per outing.
That's true. But, like, look at Samuel Dunn. You don't use him. He was used so much last year. Kind of got the Helmers treatment last year.
I just think these guys are frustrated, man. And
everybody's.
I think the whole, like I said, mentally, like, I just think this whole coach, the whole pitching staff as a whole, is just kind of frustrated with how it's going, and because you can see when they walk off the mound, when they're, you know, they go into the tunnel full of players, you can see in their body language, man. Yeah. Like,
and
you can.
And I think, like, I love what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Just because, and it's a lot for just Jay to handle right now. Because I think Coach Yeske is
$2 million is a lot of money.
Look, he can't do it all. Wes Johnson was able to develop.
You're the head coach.
I get
it's your
that.
Job to do it all.
But here's the thing: when you hire a guy that you used to work with,
then you should already
know. You should. That's what I'm saying.
I think it was a
too quick hire, and I think Coach Yeske is just.
I feel like Coach Yeske and Coach Johnson don't like each other. Like,
really?
It's got to be something. And at this point, objectively, I'm putting my hands up and just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. There has to be something going on that Nate Yeske doesn't even go out for mound visits. He doesn't even, like, you never see him at all.
It's questionable, but as far as the offensive side, that's another problem.
They've been better. No, I think they've been better.
No, they've been better, but when you look at, obviously, when you look last year, .282 batting average right now. Did you expect the squad to fall so much after? I know, obviously, you lost all the stars.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you got to think, like, you lose 8 to 9 key field players.
That's really what's hurting.
And then you got, you know, I'm just going to name a couple of them. Two of them, fifth-year seniors, Cade Beloso and Gavin Dugas, who you knew every single time they were stepping up to the plate, you were going to get a good at-bat.
Yep.
And you don't see that with anybody on, like, honestly, not even Tommy White. You don't see anybody in this 9 players who are going to go out
quality
at-bats.
Consistently.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Here's
just don't see it.
The part that frustrates me, and I'm going to throw a little bit to the LSU fans here. Because I think we as fans have this misconception of what LSU is supposed to look like. There were years where the guys hitting in the top 3 of the lineup for LSU weren't even hitting .300. Yeah, guys hitting .250, .260, .270. Tommy White's hitting .321, and we're crapping on him for not being that good. He's been Dylan Cruz hit .500 last year.
Yeah.
And we're mad at Tommy White for hitting .321 because he's not hitting .500.
I don't think that's how
baseball works.
I don't think Michael's.
I'm not saying
that you're saying that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is fans have attacked this offense for they can't get it done.
Yeah.
Dude, they're hitting the ball well.
And you know how much easier it was for Tommy White last year to go up after
Trey Morgan and Dylan Cruz?
Pitchers had to go through Dylan Cruz,
which was
probably a 9-8 pitch at bat, and then Trey Morgan, who was also a guy that never struck out.
People are saying Stephen Milam hasn't been playing well. The guy's 18 years old, fresh out of high school, hitting .308 in college ball. I guarantee you that 95% of the LSU fans out there couldn't hit .308 against peewee ball. I promise you, they couldn't hit .308 against Pee Wee pitching.
Yeah.
It's like, who are we talking about here?
Yeah,
the pitching has been a problem.
It's been the thing, and that's what was supposed to
be the
pony.
Strong.
Yeah, it was supposed to be your horse, you know, into the midnight. You know,
the hitting has been decent.
It's been good enough for you to win games.
Exactly. You score 6 runs against Vanderbilt when Gage Jump gives you a good start. That should be enough to win a game.
Even look at Florida. Look at Florida on the Saturday
night. That should be enough to win games, man. Like, you shouldn't have to score 12 runs like LSU did last year to win baseball games.
I agree.
You shouldn't have to do that. You should be able to win games 4-3 or 6-5.
The only thing that concerns me is the quality of at bats.
We've seen
a lot of strikeouts from
that's been a problem.
It's the strikeouts, and it's just the inconsistency of taking at bats. You see one at bat. A guy takes a really good at bat, and then the second one he'll not know the situation with runners, you know, on base, and he'll first pitch swing. You know?
Specifically,
and that's
Bear Jones.
Not something. No, that's just the whole lineup. To be frank.
Well, I know, but from what I've seen, it's like.
But I mean, it's just so inconsistent that it hurts his team. And really, besides Tommy White right now, you don't have a guy that is consistently hitting good for you. It's just really spotty throughout the entire lineup, and that's really what. What is hurt? But what changes would you make to the lineup as far as, like, you know?
I wouldn't. They're starting to figure it out. You're not going to change Michael Braswell. I know everybody wants to take Michael Braswell's spot. You're not going to do it because he's the best defensive shortstop in the SEC, without a shadow of a doubt. He makes some plays that are absolutely unbelievable. And you know what? Go ahead and charge him with a key error. I dare you to find me a shortstop this year who doesn't have a key error in a big moment in a ball game. Michael Braswell has kept you in baseball games with his defense at shortstop. That's what people realize. A spot in the lineup is more than just how you swing the bat.
Well, and his hitting has already been better than it has been his entire collegiate career. And the only reason he was on an all-SEC team at South Carolina was because of his defense. Yeah. So,
yeah, I you want me to go first?
Go ahead, because I'm not going to change anything.
I'm just going to say, I think when you see a guy struggle so much, like let's take, you know, obviously I'm not here to pick on people. This is just being real. Like Paxton Kling, when you see him struggling so much in the outfield, I mean, with the bat, I know he's your best outfielder, but why not let a guy like Jake Brown have a chance? Why not let Ashton Larson, that's a guy that's
been – I thought Ashton Larson had some good swings.
Putting ball to bat. Even Ben Napolt, man. Ben Napolt has been here at LSU now for 2 years, and he's waited his turn, and it's like he was so good at VCU. Like, this guy could go start for a team like a mid-major and be really good. And I just don't understand why you don't give some guys chances and some not.
VCU ain't playing Tennessee next weekend.
I mean,
they're right, playing Richmond. Well, I don't know that for a fact. I'm just guessing based on the area. Like, they're not playing Tennessee next weekend.
No, but he's been solid.
I like Ben Napolt. I think he's very similar to Michael Braswell in the way that, like, he's going to give you a really good glove. He's not going to play third base. He's not going to play second. Mm-hmm. Unless you feel comfortable putting him in the outfield, which I don't think you are, like, there really is no spot for Ben Napolt because Tommy White has played a great third base this year. Steven Milam has locked that position down.
Yeah.
And you're not – benching like, Jerry Jones.
Yeah, let your guys develop, man. Like, it's hard right now, but it looks so bad because you've had such an unfair
schedule. This is a very young
schedule.
Team.
The schedule extremely has young. Really just not helped LSU at
but
all.
That,
you get a more favorable schedule at the end of the season where, you know, the West team.
Ain't nothing kind of, favorable in the SEC,
well,
man.
It's more favorable than getting Florida, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas back-to-back-to-back weekends. When you have Mizzou and Auburn and all those teams that are struggling right now. But as a whole, do you think that LSU makes a tournament this year?
Yeah.
And if so, what is it going to take? Like as far
they're going to win enough baseball games to make the NCAA tournament.
They'll make the tournament. And they'll get a regional.
This same way, I love doing this because it's the only sport that we get to do this in. The same way that curse of A matters in football,
yeah.
The same way that the UK or the KU matters in college basketball – that purple and gold LSU matters in college baseball. They will put us in the tournament just because we're LSU. And you know, that's a great call to be able to make and say, you know, hey buddy, cut us a solid. We're LSU. We just won last year. And they'll give it to us. So this team will make the tournament. Will they host? Probably not.
Oh, no.
We'll see how it goes. But there'll be
I don't think they need to be honest.
There'll be a two seed somewhere. They usually send us out west. We'll probably go to Corvallis or Palo Alto or
Nebraska.
No, we'll go out west coast and play at like 10 p.m. and we'll win the regional and everybody's just going to quiet down. But no, they'll make the tournament.
They'll be all right.
I'm very confident in that.
I agree.
Like I said, I think you just have to start hot next week against Tennessee. That's a team that has been inconsistent, but, like, really good. They've showed they can be really good.
And they're going to be looking for revenge against you, man.
Oh, brother. And if, Tony Vitello, if he ain't holding a grudge on Jay Johnson after what he did to him last year, he's doing it this week. So, but like I said, after Tennessee, you have Mizzou. Then you have Auburn. That's two teams that have really struggled. Then you have A&M at the middle of your schedule where they're very good. Probably,
they're great.
In my opinion, probably the best team besides Arkansas in the country. But then you have Ole Miss struggling as well and Bama who just got swept. So, I mean, like, these are all winnable. It's not like they're not winnable.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few games where against, like, Arkansas, you knew you weren't winning the Hagen-Smith game. You knew that. Like, you just knew it.
How about your boy Luke Hill, by the way, keeping his helmet on for the first hack against
– shout out Luke, man.
Shout out to Luke.
By the time of this recording, it says birthday. So,
happy birthday, Luke.
Luke Hill. He told me he was going to
take the helmet on, man.
Daddy hack off of Hagen Smith. At least he kept his helmet on.
Ain't nobody hitting Hagen Smith right now, Luke, so don't feel bad about it.
Yeah. He actually got a hit off of him.
Hey, you better than a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying. So, Like I said, I think they'll win 16-17. Yeah. That's enough. You just need 15. Absolutely. The number, the magic number is 15. Hey,
you go make a run in the SEC tournament when you're playing for your life, and
they'll do it.
Anything can happen when you pull up to Hoover. Yep. Just get there, and we'll figure the rest out.
But I'm going to ask you, Andon, now we're going to switch over. You know what the hell we're talking about now.
Oh, yes, sir.
Press that dang button.
Masters Week, yes, baby.
One of the best weeks in sports is this week, as the pros will take on Augusta National in Georgia. To remind everyone, this is a tournament that both players from LIV and PGA Tour can participate. So let's get into it. Obviously, the big story of this tournament is that Tiger Woods is participating. We have not seen him since the Genesis, where he withdrew to quote-unquote illness.
After he had shot like 11 over in two rounds.
He would have got cut. But injuries also have not been on his side. Yeah. There's been reports already this week that his his foot has been bothering him, as well as his back. So will Tiger Woods make his 24th consecutive cut at Augusta?
No. I love you, Big Cat, and you're my favorite golfer ever, as you are for millions of other people, but I just don't see it. This Masters field, when you look at it top to bottom, man, it's just so stacked. And there's so many great competitors in this field, and I just don't see Tiger being able to manage Augusta the way he's done the past couple of years after the injuries.
He's just hurt, man.
He's just not feeling great. And it's kind of sad to see one of your favorite athletes go out like that. It feels like I'm watching Drew Brees in like 2020, where it's like, man, the arm is just shot. Yeah. And for Tiger, the swing is still there. Mm-hmm. He can go play 18 holes right now and shoot better than all three of us combined. Look, but
you got to think of it like you're walking 18 holes a day, man.
Yeah.
That's where it comes into mind.
And Augusta is a very up-and-down golf course as well. It's very hard on your body. And I just don't think that when it comes to playing PGA Tour-level golf, I don't think that Tiger has that anymore. Yep. He for sure has the mentality. But I just don't think his body will allow him to do the things he's done previously.
Okay. See, I'm going to disagree. I think that if he is healthy enough to walk around and do and play the full rounds before the cut, I think his body needs to hold him up, obviously. Yeah. He's had a lot of injuries.
That's the question.
If his body is able to hold him up, I don't see why he can't make the cut. I think that's as far as he'd be able to go. But I think that he could definitely make the cut if his body stays healthy.
Yeah, and I agree. I like I said, I'm going to say Tiger Woods does not make the cut, and I could very well see him making the cut. It's just the fact that we know where this story goes at the end of the day, right, Andon? Like, it's happened in the Genesis. It happened last Masters where he got carted off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just catching up to him. It's really sad to see, like we said, like literally the GOAT of golf, no question about it. It just sucks that
his body's just starting to let him down, man. And
at least we have his kid to, you know.
Absolutely. Charlie's going to be a hell of a player when he grows up.
His son's going to be better than him. But next up, do you think we will see, but without giving me your winner, obviously, do you think we see a LIV or a PGA golfer win this event?
PGA.
Yeah.
Without giving you a winner, it'll be a PGA Tour golfer.
I agree.
I'm going to say PGA guy, too. I know Rom was a PGA guy this time last year, but he's not. He's LIV now. So I'm going to stay. Even with how the LIV guys are, like, really good, that money, man, that money's getting to their head. I'm going with PGA. Last year, John Rom wins the tournament after three-putting literally the first hole that he played. Do you expect a top-five finish from him this weekend?
I'll say top 10. I'm not sure about top 5. John Rahm's a hell of a golfer. He's one of the best drivers of the golf ball that I've ever watched, like, period.
Weird swing.
It is a weird swing, but, you know, it's like when you grow up playing baseball, they tell you to swing your swing and just make sure you do a couple of things right. Make sure you stay on plane. Make sure you get the head to the ball and keep the face square. And that's what John Rahm does, man. So I can't hate on it because he's won millions of dollars swinging that way. So I'll say top 10, but I'm a little hesitant to say top 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. That's what I got on my thing. I think it's very possible that he hits the top 5. But like you said, I think a top 10 is a reasonable finish.
When I say top 10, I lean more towards 6 or 7 than I do like 9 or 10. Fine. Which it, when you get to Augusta, that's a big jump. That's four shots between 6 and 10 right there. So, I mean, that's
be more this weekend.
Yeah, I see him more towards the 5 than the 10, but
yes. Yeah. Okay. I will say John Rahm makes a top 5 finish, whether that's tied for 5th or whether that's 4th. He could go and repeat. But I don't know. Like, my gut just tells me that John Rahm's not winning this thing this year. What star do you think struggles this weekend that people may not expect?
Rory McIlroy.
Okay. Oh, my
playing
goodness.
Great golf on the LIV Tour right now, but I just don't see it. I don't believe in Rory when it comes to majors, especially at Augusta. I think that he is a weekday warrior. I think he plays great on Thursday and Friday, and then when we get to those final pairings for the weekend, he just kind of trails off, and he kind of loses it somewhere. And I don't know what's going on, but I just don't believe that he is who everybody says he is. He's playing great golf right now, but I just have my doubts about him on a big stage like that.
Yeah.
Did I steal your answer again?
You did. Rory.
I'm sorry,
Rory Mag.
Don't worry, guys. I have 2. So
you got 2?
I got 2. I already said Tiger Woods. That's too easy. I'm going to go out and say Justin Thomas. Let his caddy go recently. Andon and I kind of talked about that.
Yeah.
And just probably the worst putter on tour right now. It will be either a very good weekend from him because he dropped his – caddy, or a really, really bad one.
By the way, I'm peering over at Andre's notes right here. He also has Rory McIlroy down as the other golfer.
I have Rory as the other.
Watch.
He was cut last year.
He's going to go crazy.
Now that we've all said this, Rory McIlroy, top 5 finish, you can lock it. That'll be the biggest lock of the week.
Here's the thing. Rory McIlroy is phenomenal with his irons. Probably the best on tour.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Here's the thing. He's just not good at Augusta.
He
struggled over time, like literally didn't make the cut last year.
In Augusta, you have to be great within 150 yards, and Rory McIlroy is usually not.
Yeah.
Like that's what makes Tiger Woods so good at Augusta, is because within 150 yards, he's a killer. But that's not who Rory McIlroy is as a golfer.
Right.
So I think that's where he kind of struggles.
He's a big driver guy.
Yeah.
So it's like – you gotta.
You could pound the ball all over Augusta National if you want, but it's not going to win you a tournament.
Right. Okay. So who's a golfer that may be flying under everyone's radar that you think we have to watch out for this weekend? This is a fun one.
So me and my parents, we have a Masters pick challenge that we do every year, where we pick 4 golfers and we track their scores, and whoever has the lowest combined score with all their golfers wins. Ooh. And I have one that is.
You can tell us all, honestly.
We'll get there because I think we're doing like a top 5 pick.
Okay.
My guys will be included in that. But the one I have is flying under the radar is Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
I just think he's a great golfer and he plays great at Augusta National. Not a lot of people pay attention to him when it comes to the bigger majors and things like that.
Yep.
But I think that this is the kind of year where it is a deep field, but it feels like a very even field.
It's
where
very even.
A guy like Xander can go and shoot a 6-under and potentially win the Masters.
Because of that.
Just because everybody is not going to be – like, the winning score will not be any lower than 12. That's my opinion. You're not going to see like you did Jordan Spieth when he won the Masters shoot 18 under. Like, it's just not going to be that way.
That was COVID year.
That was well before COVID.
Sorry,
that was like 2016.
I think of Dustin Johnson.
But yeah, Xander Schauffele is my kind of like under the radar, can go have a great weekend and be there thereabouts on Sunday.
I love that pick.
So I got a guy.
Here's a guy.
So, I don't think he's going to win or probably finish top 5.
We're not picking winners.
I'm not picking winners. This is just somebody underrated.
Denny McCarthy, minus 20 in the Valero Texas Open. Okay. And he's played great golf. He's got a good putter.
Yeah.
His inside 200, he's been looking really well. And he went up against Akshay Bhatia, who was the 89th spot.
Really cool story behind that.
Yeah, he was on the what was it?
He was on the chip, putt, and drive
in Augusta.
In Augusta as a child, won it.
Really?
By the way,
he won it.
A few weeks ago was his birthday, and his mom's wish for him was to make Augusta. He had to win the Valero Open to be qualified for Augusta.
And it was like a tied. It was a tied win.
He knows the course very well. He's played it a lot when he was a kid.
Yeah,
that's another guy that you could watch out for.
He got lucky though because Denny McCarthy and
they were both tied.
They tied, and McCarthy won in the playoff, but they gave Batia in.
That which is cool to see.
Yeah, that's
good on Augusta to give him
good on PGA.
Yeah, to give him the nod and help the kid out a little bit.
A guy for me, watch out for the Irish man himself, baby. Love my big boys. Like I said, hold on, pause, but. Shane Lowry, man. Shane Lowry is one of the most consistent golfers that I've ever watched on tour. And like I said, consistency wins tournaments. If he gets hot one day, you can call a wrap.
He's getting up there in age. Yeah. But if he can drive the golf ball well, I know I just crapped on Rory McIlroy for being too driver heavy, but the problem with Shane Lowry is he's going to be solid within 150 yards. If he can drive the golf ball well and put himself in favorable spots to go and attack pins, he's going to have a great weekend because he always will.
Yeah, I agree. I love Shane Lowry and did really well last year at Augusta. And that's really something I factor in when I look at, who's going to do well this year is guys that have done consistently
have the track record.
Well at Augusta and more younger guys too. But finally, give me your top five golfers this weekend first, and then we'll talk about our winner. So, you can go first.
Okay, I'll go. Mine will not be as star-studded as everybody's, talking about. Here are the five that I have. It's my four golfers that I picked in the challenge, and I'm going to add one more that my dad actually picked. Wyndham Clark is up there, who I think can be a potential winner. I think he could win. Xander Schauffele, of course, who I mentioned. Owen Wilson's long-lost brother, Will Zalatoris. And I also have Sam Burns, LSU's own Sam Burns in there as a potential, fly under the radar.
If he makes day three,
he might win
the whole thing.
If he can get there, come on, Sammy. We're rooting for you here.
We're rooting for you back here.
But, those four guys and the fifth that I'll throw in is Hideki Matsuyama, just because I think that he can do it again, man. I just think he's playing.
Left a lot of stars out.
I did. I always feel like it's somebody you don't expect.
And it's true. And I love your Schauffele pick, and I love the Wyndham Clark pick.
Love Wyndham Clark.
Love the Wyndham Clark pick, and I should have picked that as one of my underrated picks because
he
has played so great this entire
he's fourth in the betting odds right now.
Which is kind of wild. I still think he's underrated.
Shout out Wyndham Clark.
Shout out Wyndham Clark. Hell of a putter. I'll go. Scottie Scheffler. Just been so damn consistent. And one thing about Scottie is his freaking irons are phenomenal.
If he can figure it out on the greens.
Yeah, if
his putting
the putter
is a little
has been bad.
Because
if
Augusta is putt
well,
heavy.
If he was an average putter, if he had an average putter,
it wouldn't be close.
He would have minus odds.
But the thing is about Scott Scheffler, he always finds a way. He literally just somehow finds a way. Second, I'm going John Rahm. I think the experience helps him. Then I'm going to go Jordan Spieth. I think he's been playing consistent golf this year. One of my buddies, Lucas, told me, he's like, I don't think so. I think Spieth is out of his prime, which is kind of true, but he's played consistent this year, and he knows the course. I got to go Spieth. Four, I have Xander Schauffele. And like I said, these are in no order. And then I have Brooks Koepka. That's a guy that,
I like that pick.
Tit for tat. I have to put a LIV guy down there.
Besides.
My LIV guy was Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson?
I don't have him down here, but as far as a live guy that's going to play really well, I think DJ always plays pretty well around Augusta National. It feels like home for him. He's a South Carolina kid.
Yeah.
DJ's going to play well this weekend. I just don't see any of the live guys. I think the travel is actually a lot harder than people think
it is. I agree. And it's more physically demanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. When you're playing in Brazil 1 week and then you're playing in Saudi Arabia and you're not allowed to skip a lot of events, it's tough on the body.
It is, but they're getting paid for it, so they'd be all right. But Zalatoris. I know you said Zalatoris, but man, I love Zalatoris. It's just, dude, he has not been the same after that back injury a few years ago. Which
I just believe in him. I believe in him because I think he can go out and play really good golf on his day. Mm-hmm. Another guy that is flying under the radar, in my opinion, is Cam Smith.
Cam Smith,
who's always been thereabouts. You know,
I think Australian, right?
Yes, I think he can go out and get one if he plays really well over the weekend.
A little mullet.
Yeah, man, a little mullet action. Mullet. You know, it's just such a deep field, and there's so many guys.
I'll keep going, tit for tat. Cameron Young.
Yeah.
Another guy that I could see doing well. Nick Taylor, that's another guy.
I love Nick Taylor's
been pretty consistent this year.
You know,
but I don't want a Canadian winning the Masters. I just don't like that. I don't want that to happen.
What's your beef against Canadians?
I don't have one. I just love when it's a golfer I like. I like Nick Taylor.
You don't like any Canadian golfers? This guy hates Canada.
We're about to get canceled in Canada. No. You know what? I'll make up for it right now. I love Hold on.
See, you gotta think about it.
You like poutines? You like poutines? Poutines are good. It's good Canadian food.
I have had that before. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of just Canadians right now.
Can you think of any?
No, not really. Nick Taylor. And I do like Nick Taylor. I just don't want him to win.
But Michael, please give us your top five.
Yeah, Michael, give me your top five.
Okay. Well, I don't really have a top five for you, but I got some. So I like the Sam Burns pick. So I have Sam Burns in there. I got Koepka in there. I got Schauffele in there. But I got Scotty in there. And I'm just going to go ahead and say that I have Scotty winning. Because
another jacket.
I just think that if he, it's easier said than done. But if he is able to putt decent on these greens at Augusta,
it's hard though.
It's really difficult to do. But if he is able to do it, I mean, there's not a better golfer right now than him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's what I got.
I mean, it's true. It's true. He's so consistent.
Are we going into winners now?
Yeah, go into your winner.
You know what? I'm going to go with my underdog, man. Give me Wyndham Clark.
I think
Wyndham is just, like, he's going to string around together. And when it comes to Augusta National, you just have to be there. Yeah. You don't have to make Sunday.
That's
you don't have to hit, storm. Dude. You don't have to storm the course. You don't have to be elite. You just need to be there because this course, it's magical in a way that it just draws people into mistakes.
Yeah, and one thing about Augusta is, like, nobody's going to go out and you're not going to get behind, like, crazy amounts. Like, you're not going to go get behind 6-7 shots as you were.
If you do,
then it feels kind of like.
But you saw Francisco Molinari the year that Tiger Woods won, took a 3-shot lead into 16 and found the water twice. And opened the door for Tiger, and Tiger, being the amazing golfer that he is with the mentality that he has, took advantage of it. So if you can be there, if you're within 4 shots, you've got a chance to go and win the Masters.
Like 6-7 is like, then it starts to feel like.
Even then, it feels like a lot, but that's, you know, you make 3 birdies, they bogey some holes, and you're right there within 2 shots, and anything can happen at that point. You just have to be there. And I think Wyndham Clark is going to be there. I think he's going to be able to outlast. Give the man the green jacket, Wyndham Clark.
I'm going to go with Jordan Spieth. I love the way he's been playing this year. Like I said, he plays really well in this tournament. I think it's going to be between him and Scheffler. I could also see I could see Schauffele in there. That's a guy that, like, literally he's not flown under radars, but it just feels to some extent that he's due. Like, he's always 1 or 2 shots away.
It's
kind of like Hovland.
Yeah.
Like, Hovland has been playing awful golf, which is why I didn't even talk about him today. Love Victor Hovland. But
I'd like to throw a shout out to Patty Ice as well, Patrick Cantlay. I think he's another guy that could play a very good round. I actually love Patrick Cantlay.
Too slow of a player.
I love him. I think he's great. And I love that. I love that he deliberately pisses people off when he slows the game down.
It freaking works, man.
Yeah, it does. It works. And you know what? I'll let him take all the time he wants. I like you, Patty Ice.
Well, it's good to know Patrick Cantlay has one fan. As we wrap up, though, with the show this week, we want to let our listeners know that we will be live commentating the LSU National L Club Spring Game, which will be on April 13th at 1 p.m. That can be streamed here on 91.1 KLSU Baton Rouge or you can listen by streaming it on our website at klsuradio.fm
and
radio
on the mic.
Radio FX. So if you want to catch it on the dial, 91.1 on the FM dial. If you want to listen on a laptop or you have a sound system that is hooked up to the internet, klsuradio.fm. Or if you want to listen in on your phone, Bluetooth, however you want to do it, you can download the Radio FX app. And once you download it, just look up KLSU. We'll pop right up. Yeah. We'll be going live 1 o'clock on Saturday with the spring game. We're super fired up. Yeah. It'll be me and Andre in the booth calling the game.
Tune into those fellas, man.
Michael and Jaden will be doing a halftime show.
Yep.
We might have a special surprise for halftime. You just have to wait and see about that.
Yep.
But we're super excited, man. Yeah, it's our first time doing this in 20 years.
Yes.
And we're super excited to have this opportunity.
And another thing is a lot of Tiger fans are going to want to watch the game, obviously. But you can still sync us up. You can still sync us up.
Oh, absolutely.
If you want to just pause the game and just wait till when we're talking about it, pretty much.
Yeah,
it's that easy.
Turn the game on, mute the commentary, listen to Andon. You know, he's better than what they got going on
at all. Man, you're too kind. But yes.
Mentioning LSU spring football, before we wrap up, let me know what you guys are most interested in watching for this next Saturday.
I'm interested in a room that I think hasn't been given a lot of attention. I'm interested in the offensive line. It's a veteran group, but it's also a group that had some problems, especially with their discipline. So I'm just interested to see how Brad Davis is kind of coaching a room that it was up for a Joe Moore Award last season. I'm interested to see what they look like because you are losing your signal caller in Charles Turner III to the draft. So I'm interested to see how that role is filled, who steps in there. I think the offensive line has the chance to be a great unit this year, especially with Garrett Nussmeier, who is going to sling it around. You know, I'm interested to see how they look.
Yeah.
I love that. I think the offensive line is going to be amazing for us this year. I genuinely think that this
coming back,
this offensive line is going to be the best in the country. In my opinion,
they'll win the Joe Moore.
I am extremely excited to see how this defense looks, especially in the defensive back room. I'm excited to see us not playing 10 feet off the ball. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see us, you know, pressing. I'm excited to see all that. I'm excited to see the energy on the defense because, you know, they got a lot of hate last year.
Oh, yeah.
They got a lot of shade.
They heard it.
And it was well deserved.
It was.
But they got a lot of shade and they hear it and they know it. And I think there's a lot of confidence in this team because there's a lot of people that are doubting them right now. And I would like to see how they do and how they handle against each other. I mean, it's a spring game, but I also Nussmeier. I need to see how Nussmeier plays.
And Rhea defense. Yeah.
And look out for Ricky Collins, too. I think he might have a day.
Yeah. I'm most excited to see what has changed with this LSU defense. But specifically the defensive back group, I think Corey Raymond is going to make those guys look like a whole other group than they were last year. And another thing is the linebackers. We knew the linebackers were really good.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to watch Greg Penn fly all over Call of Duty.
You know what, man? If there was a bright spot on that LSU defense, it was Greg Penn.
It was Greg Penn.
And, man, he's done everything he's ever been asked since he got here. And it felt like they kept trying to replace him. And he's so valuable to this defense.
I agree. And so I'm just excited to see the defensive, like, energy and just – but it's time for the best segment of the week. It's time to give our poo-poo Broussard of the week, which goes after the worst performance of the week, whether that's a team, a fan base, a coach, a player, whoever. So who wants to go first?
I give it to you, Mike. You got it.
Now I got to think.
It was the White Sox last year. I mean, I'll go first. You know what?
Yeah, you know what? Let's let Andre lead off because I don't think that this one is
it's
sports related.
It's not even sports related. this week mine is not even sports related. This is the first time I've done this since I gave the poo-poo Broussard to the state of Mississippi as a whole.
What a great episode that was, too. That was you, me, and Nate taking a dump on the state of Mississippi for 45 minutes.
I remember that. But I got this idea from one of our former reporters here at KLSU, Nathan Messina. So Monday was the solar eclipse, and shout out NBA Youngboy, because that's a great song, but we're talking about the actual solar eclipse here. So here in Baton Rouge, I went outside on Monday – and there was it was not only cloudy outside, it was raining. So for that, I'm giving the poo-poo Broussard to Mother Nature this week. And Mother Nature, you're great. Don't get me wrong. You're great. But you just didn't show up when it mattered most. It was game seven. And I won't see a performance like this until, what, how many years is it going to be? Like 20-something?
Yeah, 2044, I think, is the next one.
Yeah, and I'll probably have kids by then or doing something.
That doesn't mean you can't watch the solar eclipse.
I mean, I'll be doing something more than watching the solar eclipse.
So, oh, come on.
So, yeah, Mother Nature and the solar eclipse. This is a duo. You are my poo-poo Broussard of the week.
Sad trombone.
So, last week I went Chicago White Sox. I had a whole story with them. Hey, guess what, fellas? You're back.
We're giving it to them again.
Yeah, they're going to. Honestly,
the other night.
Man, they won 9. They are 1-9. They're
dang,
like
they
are 1-9.
That's almost
nine.
Worse than not winning at all is being the one loss to a really bad team.
Like, yeah. So maybe and, the but, Braves can get hey, it too. Bright spot, they up 5-0 right now. But anyways, they'll still probably lose. It's only the first it's inning. Only the first inning. But anyways, the White Sox, man, I'm a long time diehard fan. Screw you and the Cubs and but
hey, we blew a lead last night too. Don't worry about
but
it.
So my main thing with the White Sox, man, is just the. I mean, I can't. I'm
exactly,
just,
you can't even keep a straight face when you talk
just,
about the White
it's
Sox.
Just so,
it just
good.
Sucks so bad.
It's so bad.
That bad
oh,
man.
It's
that
so
bad.
Bad.
I have a feeling that when we come back, once this semester is over, and we come back in August,
they're gonna be World Series.
Michael Pogge will still be giving the poo poo Broussard to Chicago White
until
Sox.
Until they do something to make something happen, you know, change my mind.
Buddy.
They are reigning national champions of the poo poo Broussard.
I will allow you to do it. But,
we might have to take Michael off the podcast when it comes to that.
And then it's your turn. Wait. Now you got to say it.
The reigning national champs, Poo Poo Broussard winners, Chicago White Sox.
We're just declaring them as like the worst.
You know what? The Twin Cities are. You know, not the Twin Cities. I'm
the
sorry.
Twin Cities.
I lost it for a minute.
I'm like trying to figure out what city that
the
is.
The second city is getting some double hate this week because mine is also related to Chicago sports. Last night, and by the time that this is posted, this will be well out of date, but this is a historic collapse. The Cubs are on their West Coast road trip right now. We're in San Diego playing the Padres. And last night was Javier Assad versus Yu Darvish. Assad goes 5 innings shut, and the Cubs are up 8-0 going into the 6th inning.
On Darvish Day.
We touched up Yu Darvish. We scored 8 runs through 5 innings. 8 runs through 4 innings, to be exact. And went into the 6th inning up 8-0. I have a group chat with my father, who is the biggest Chicago Cubs fan I know, and former KLSU sports reporter Nathan Messina, where we talk about the Cubs because we are all huge Cubs fans. And I texted that group chat when I saw that we were up 8-0 going into the 6th. And I said, and I quote, "We are the best baseball team in the world." My father then sends to that same group chat, "Let's go!" exclamation mark with the W flag that the Cubs fly after every win. And Nathan Messina says, "Ring season, we're due." I then sent something that should be framed in the They Already Knew Hall of Fame. I said, "It is only the 4th inning, but if we blow an 8-0 lead, I'll die inside." Well, I went to sleep after that text, and I woke up this morning, and I was dead inside. The Cubs blew an 8-0 lead to lose 9-8 to the San Diego Padres.
Pretty cool because all 3 of our teams blew a lead last night.
And I have been getting nothing but stick from Nathan Messina and from my father for being the one who initiated the whole conversation.
So,
however, it's not the Chicago Cubs as a whole who I'm attacking because we've actually had a very good start to this season. Jose Quas for blowing that lead, being a huge part of that. And for just generally being bad in the season and a half that you've been with the Chicago Cubs, you get my poo-poo Broussard. Jose Kwas, you're the poo-poo Broussard this week.
Hold on.
Uh-oh. Oh, man. Womp, 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 womp for Jose Kwas, for the Chicago White Sox, and sadly for Mother Nature. You kind of pooped the bed on that.
I had options, too, this week. I could have gone Braves, Spencer, or just the Braves training staff.
The Braves medical staff.
There just wasn't any.
Objectively terrible. Like, blowing a big lead like that is sucky, but we play 162 games.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
It's really not
but
that big of a deal.
But when you lose your best pitcher on the first day.
Yeah, that's bad.
The White Sox got swept by the Royals in four games.
Hey, the Royals
aren't that bad.
Shout out Bobby Witt. The Royals are actually getting better.
Royals are not that bad as you think.
It's the Patrick Mahomes money, man.
But that is going to do it for us here today. Thanks to Michael and Andon for joining me and being so great. And I'm Andre Champagne, and this has been the Hodges Huddle.
Okay, 91.1, KLSUradio.fm, Radio FX, Spring Game, Saturday, April 13th, 1 o'clock. Be there.
And on the mic.